Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Rob Williams throws it down over the top. Up the elevator to the Time Lord.
Inside Williams again gets two.
But I thought he'd get a lot more assists. And oh, as Time Lord just throws down another big time dunk. There's a one hand bounce pass, and Time Lord just catches. Man, he can float in the air.
Every day that goes by, it's getting a little bit better. I'm glad we're not playing a game. You know, this Sunday, I'm glad we have time to prepare. You know, it's been a good week or so being in here.
In hindsight, I think as far as a public safety issue goes, I probably could have made a better quality decision.
If you want to make a run in the playoffs, you got to beat every team.
They were cutting with a purpose, and that makes a difference. They were dynamic. Robert Williams was rolling with a purpose.
Or you got to be stronger on pucks down low. I thought we threw a few away a number of times.
And then I think when you talk about Cam, you look at, you know, the things he can do, the designed runs, and I don't think you have to do a lot of them, but I think if you do just enough and sprinkle it in, you give the defense something they have to prepare for.
All right, welcome in. Brian Barrett with you for the next 2 hours. A lot on the docket tonight. Isn't this awesome, having all these sports back, except the other day when basically everybody lost. That kind of sucked, but it is nice to have all these sports back. So suggestion off the top to Brad Stevens, and I'll get into the Bruins and their disappointment. What a joke that is. But let's get to the Celtics first, and I have a suggestion for Brad Stevens right off the top here. And my suggestion to Brad Stevens, and this is not just for the benefit of each player, it's for the benefit of the team. So I believe that what the Celtics should do, whenever they decide Kemba Walker is going to get extended minutes, and I know he played 27 the other night, and Brad Stevens did say that he's going to ramp up the minutes even more as the Celtics get ready for a big game tomorrow night against the Toronto Raptors. My suggestion to them is to play Gordon Hayward at point guard and let Kemba Walker play off the ball for a multitude of reasons, one of which is this. This is just the reality of it. Even though Kemba Walker in title is point guard, and Gordon Hayward in title is, I guess, shooting guard, depending on how you want to put Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, and Jason Tatum in the starting lineup, Gordon Hayward's the best passer on the team. And you say, well, oh, Kemba averaged 4.8 assists, and Gordon Hayward averaged 4.1. I don't care about the assist totals. If you watch those two guys play, Gordon Hayward is a much better facilitator, and Gordon Hayward is a much better passer. So the other reason that you should have Gordon Hayward be the point guard rather than Kemba Walker is to save Kemba Walker and take some pressure off Kemba Walker and not put as much mileage on Kemba Walker in the postseason. Because one of the things I've noticed about Kemba Walker is it appears he has some of his burst back. But the big thing for the Celtics is going to be getting Kemba Walker to the finish line. It's not about the first series. It's about getting Kemba Walker to the finish line. And I get they're ramping him up now. But one of the things that Kemba Walker, you have to be aware of, is the knee stuff. He's had three procedures on that knee, one of which is a full-out meniscus tear, which is never good long-term. And now he's had two arthroscopic knee surgeries since then. Basically, the guy's got an arthritic knee at the age of 29. So the reality is, Kemba Walker, in all likelihood, is going to have issues with his knee throughout the postseason, okay? So I believe that, first of all, this would help Kemba, where he doesn't have to bring the ball up all the time. He doesn't have to set up the offense. And secondly, one thing that Kemba Walker is exceptionally good at, and it was the same thing when Isaiah Thomas was here, running off those screens, catching the ball and either shooting or catching the ball and going right to the basket, coming off a screen. He is so good getting to the basket when it comes to that. And he's so good at stopping and drawing a foul from behind. And he's really good elevating and just shooting a jump shot, catching the ball off a screen. So I believe that benefits Kemba Walker, and I also believe it helps Kemba Walker's health. And then the other big part of this is you put the ball in your best facilitator's hands for the majority of the basketball game. And I get the Celtics, they like to move the ball a lot, etc. I get all that. But I just feel like it'd take a lot of pressure off Kemba Walker, and I believe that it would highlight the best skill set of Gordon Hayward, which is his passing ability. Not to mention, here's another thing about Gordon Hayward. If you want to look at some of the silver linings in this 2-2 run so far for the Celtics in the Orlando bubble, which has been weird to see some of these teams that have been really good. Phoenix is 4-0. Where the hell did that come from? But anyway, you look at Gordon Hayward in the bubble, 18 points a game. And here's another key number for Gordon Hayward. Because he has the ball in his hands more, he's getting to the free throw line 6 times per game. His last season in Utah, when you signed him to a max contract, he was getting to the free throw line 6 times a game. The reason you gave Gordon Hayward a max contract was because not just his ability to score, it was his ability to create for others. It was his ability to play defense. He was a complete basketball player when you got him from Utah. And for the first time, we're actually seeing that version of Gordon Hayward, the guy that can make plays for other people, the guy that can hit open shots, and the guy that gets to the free throw line 6 times per game in the last 4 contests for the Celtics. So if I'm Brad Stevens, I'm really contemplating, for the benefit of both players and the team, it benefits 3 things, if you will. The team, Kemba, and Gordon both individually. Because the team will be better because their best playmaker has the ball in his hands. And then Kemba Walker has a better chance at making it to the finish line if you don't ask him to play point guard for the majority of the basketball game. And then Gordon Hayward, you highlight his best attribute as a player. So that's my suggestion right off the top to Brad Stevens. Let's get to a spot where Gordon Hayward is playing point guard and Kemba Walker is flying off those screens off the ball. And then Kemba, you take some mileage off those tires so you make sure he's healthy so you can make a long run in the postseason. Okay, because that's obviously what the Celtics are trying to do. We'll see if that ends up being the case, but that is their goal. So getting back to last night's game with the Celtics, okay, they win 149-115 against the Brooklyn Nets. Congratulations. Anybody that has ever watched the NBA saw that coming. The Brooklyn Nets were coming off this big-time win over the Milwaukee Bucks, and even if they sat Giannis and Chris Middleton and those guys in the second half, that Brooklyn team beating Milwaukee, keep the basketball. I mean, geez, that Brooklyn team is absolutely horrendous with the roster they currently have right now. But now, back that win up last night, because this is what the Celtics were supposed to do. They were supposed to show up after losing to Miami and playing horrible against Miami. They were supposed to kill Brooklyn, which they did. Congratulations to the Celtics on that. Now back that up with a big-time win over the Toronto Raptors tomorrow night, because we all know the Raptors are an outstanding basketball team. You have got to prove to me that you can beat good teams in the Eastern Conference. That'll make me personally, and I believe it'll make a lot of Celtics fans, if they beat the Raptors tomorrow night, you'll feel a lot better as you get ready for the postseason, because the two good teams you've played in the East since this bubble has started back up, remember you beat the Blazers, who are battling for a playoff spot at the end of the Western Conference, that 8-9 spot, which they could get, because if you look at Memphis, that's a team that has lost every game in the bubble, and they lost their second-best player, Jaren Jackson Jr., so they could get into the postseason. But either way, they have not been a great team all season. I get they're healthy now, but the Celtics almost gave that game away. They were up 24. They almost gave it away at the end. But the bigger point is Miami, who's a good team in the East, and Milwaukee, who's a good team in the East, you lost both those games, okay? And the Miami game was worse than the Bucks game. The Bucks game, you look at the 17-2 start, that was embarrassing. I don't know why they weren't ready to play. And Jason Tatum was horrendous in that game. So you chalk that up to, all right, first game of the bubble, Tatum was horrible in the fourth quarter. Tatum was really horrible throughout the entire game. And then the Miami game, there's no excuse for that one. They just didn't show up and they fouled everybody, okay? So now you have a game against the number 2 seed in the East, the Toronto Raptors, and those are games you got to win. You got to prove to us heading into the postseason that you can beat that type of team. And another thing, just to digress real quickly here, this is something the Celtics cannot fix now because they're not catching the Raptors. But this is why I was saying a couple of months ago why it was so important to get the 2 seed. And the Celtics lost a bunch of games they shouldn't have, like the OKC game they lost right before the break. They lost to Brooklyn when LeVert went for like 50. Remember that? They lost some games they really shouldn't have lost. This is why the 2 seed was so imperative. You either get to play the Magic or the Nets in the first round if you're the Raptors. Both those teams suck. And the Celtics didn't take it seriously enough to get that 2 seed. And now that's why they're sitting in the 3 seed. And whether it's Philadelphia with a banged up team, Simmons is day to day, he's dealing with a knee issue. And we know the Indiana Pacers have played significantly better since they got to the bubble. They are much better than Brooklyn or Orlando. You could have had an easy layup series in the first round. Instead, you're going to have a battle with one of those teams. Even if it's Indiana, yeah, you're more talented, but that's a good Indiana basketball team. And we've seen that over the past couple of weeks. But one thing that really sticks out to me, or I should say the past week, one thing that really sticks out to me like a sore thumb with this Celtics team right now is, my God, is the bench an issue? And I get that when you get into a postseason series, yes, you do shorten your rotation. But let me remind you, you're going to be without Gordon Hayward at some point, the guy that I think should be the point guard for the Celtics. You're going to be without him for some point when he leaves for the birth of his child. So that makes your bench even worse, because then Smart hops into the starting lineup. But let this marinate for a second. The Celtics are the worst team in the Eastern Conference in bench scoring. Not out of the teams in the Orlando bubble. They are legitimately the worst team in the East in bench scoring. There's only one team in the NBA that's worse in bench scoring than the Boston Celtics, and that's the Portland Trail Blazers, who just a couple of months ago, everybody on their team was hurt. Remember, Nurkic is hurt. You had Zach Collins is hurt. Now those guys are back, right? So they went off and they signed Carmelo because Carmelo didn't have a job. They just needed bodies, right? So that's how bad Portland was at the beginning of the season with all the injuries they were suffering. And that's the only team in the entire NBA that the Celtics have more bench scoring than right now. So, okay, you can say, okay, I don't really worry about the depth in the postseason. And a lot of these championship teams, they don't have the super-duper 10-man benches. That's not what I'm saying. All I'm saying is, who do you really trust off the bench right now for the Celtics if you're Brad Stevens? Marcus Smart, that's it. That's the list. That's the only guy right now that the coach trusts off the bench is Marcus Smart. And in one series, he's going to have to be a starter because Gordon Hayward's going to leave for, he's going to miss probably in all likelihood two games. So they haven't found those key contributors off the bench. Brad Wanamaker, second on this team in minutes per game off the bench. And we all know he has his limitations. Not a good shooter, about 36% from three, which is nowadays about league average. And we all know you don't want him creating your offense. What I don't understand about Wanamaker is this. How can a point guard consistently lose the ball when he's dribbling up the court? I don't understand what that's about. His handle is terrible for a point guard. But anyway, what's going to happen too when he's dealing with pit bulls like Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet defensively? You think Brad Wanamaker is going to hold up like that? There's a reason the guy was playing overseas for all those years, okay? By the way, that stat always surprises me. He's the oldest player on the Celtics. That is baffling. But anyway, Enes Kanter is another guy that plays off the bench. He gets to the offensive glass, but he can only play in certain matchups because he's a disaster defensively against the pick and roll. So this is a guy that Brad Stevens will use, and he will put him into certain games, but he's not going to play in every playoff series for the Celtics significant minutes because he has such a liability at times on the defensive side of the basketball. So that leaves who? Langford? Okay, one thing I've noticed about Langford, and I don't want to make this like a big critique on Langford because he's a young guy. He was dealing with injuries at Indiana. Obviously, he dealt with injuries this year as well. And he's really green. Young player, right? He's green. Langford, to me, I don't understand why it looks like he's going to fall over every time he dribbles. And he can be a good defender in the future and all that, but the problem is he just can't shoot right now. Shoots about 20% from three, and I get it's on limited attempts. But here's what's going to happen in a postseason series if you put Langford into the game. The offense is going to be rendered ineffective because they're just going to leave him. They're going to say, hey, Langford, go ahead and shoot. And he can't hit jump shots right now. Ojeleye, I've always seemed to like Ojeleye more than Brad Stevens does. Okay, I believe he plays solid defense. We can all acknowledge that. I just wish he was a little more confident with his jump shot. Because he's been in the league for 3 years now, and he still seems hesitant to take that jump shot. And quite frankly, I don't understand why. It doesn't look bad when it comes off his hands. I get he doesn't have the best numbers. He's around 36% from three, which, as I mentioned with Wanamaker, it's about league average. Now, Wanamaker has no problem throwing him up. For some reason, Ojeleye, he's always looking for the extra pass. If you're in the corner and you have an open three, shoot it, okay? You need to have the defense respect you. So I've never understood that with Ojeleye, and I really don't understand why Brad Stevens doesn't trust him more than he does, because he does give you solid defense, and I believe he's a better shooter than the player even thinks he is. That's the thing that is baffling to me. So I wish that Brad Stevens trusts Ojeleye more, but he doesn't, except if you're playing the Bucks because they think he's a Giannis stopper, which is just a complete misconception because nobody's a Giannis stopper. Oh, yeah, what happened last year, Brian? Okay, they put Kawhi Leonard on Giannis, the best perimeter defender of this generation. Quite frankly, the best perimeter defender, one of the top three perimeter defenders I've ever seen. You put him up there with the Jordans of the world.
and the Scottie Pippins of the world defensively. Ron Artest was a great defender. Kawhi's in that. Kawhi's a two-time defensive player of the year. Oh, yeah, and anytime Giannis got into the lane, Marc Gasol was waiting for him as well.
They also had Spicy P, Andy Baca switch off on Giannis to relieve Kawhi of that.
Right.
So.
If you look at the statistics, they were one of the best defensive teams we've seen in recent history in the NBA, the Toronto team. So it wasn't just like, oh, yeah, we found a way to stop Giannis. No, they had an outstanding defensive team, and Ogilvy is not Kawhi Leonard. That's the reality of the situation. I had never understood why they thought that Ogilvy was the Giannis stopper. It's the same crap I heard about, yeah, Al Horford, he's the Giannis stopper. No. No, he's not. Williams, in my mind, needs more time, and that's on Brad. And I don't want to critique Brad or criticize Brad too much for Williams not playing that much this season because, of course, he was dealing with that hip injury. But here's where I'm at. We saw Miami lose tonight. So the Celtics are pretty much locked into the three seed. It would have to be a catastrophe for them not to pick up the three seed right now. They would really have to completely come undone in the final four games. And I heard Bradford and Mutt talking about this as well. Why not give Robert Williams an opportunity here? Because the rest of the guys we've seen enough of. You know Langford's not going to be a key contributor to this team coming off the bench this season. Sorry, he's not. He's just not there yet. Ogilvy, we know what he is. Enes Kanter, we know what he is. We know what Enes Kanter can do. I like when he comes into the game and he gives you some offensive rebounding. That's something that is not seen too much in the modern-day NBA, so I give him a lot of credit when he comes in, he does that. I'll give Kanter credit for this. He's been much better this year than I thought he was going to be when the Celtics signed him because he has been a traffic cone defensively and other stops. He tries defensively, just can't move his feet well. But we know what Kanter is. So if we know what all these guys are, and we know what Wanamaker is, if we know what all these guys are, why don't we give Robert Williams an opportunity? Why don't you give him more of an opportunity as you look down the next four games and see if maybe, just maybe, he could contribute in the postseason because you know what all those other guys are. And then I would look at this. The one thing that really concerns me about the lack of bench depth, and I told you, oh, yeah, everybody says, well, you shorten your rotation in the postseason. But just think about these other teams in the East. The Bucks have an army coming off their bench. And, oh, by the way, they get 40 points a game from their bench. You get 27. They have the other Lopez, Robin Lopez, DiVincenzo, who is starting against the Celtics when they didn't have the point guard, Eric Bledsoe. Ilyasova is going to come in and take charges. He can shoot. Pat Connaughton played really well against the Celtics last year. George Hill apparently doesn't miss from three this year. He hits 47% from three. So those are a bunch of guys that Mike Budenholzer trusts, and he doesn't have to play them all in the same series. Like, if he believes, all right, Robin Lopez probably isn't going to be good against the Celtics, say hypothetically, he doesn't have to play him. He can just go with the other guys. And then you look at the Raptors. You have Serge Ibaka coming off your bench, who was a starter in the league for the majority of his career. Back in his Oklahoma City days, he was a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. He gives you 16 and 8 a night off the bench. Norman Powell gives you 16 a game off the bench. So the Raptors have two guys they know that can play at a high level coming off the bench. Then you look at a team like the Miami Heat, who we saw the Celtics lose to on what was it, Tuesday night now. They have Goran Dragic coming off the bench, who's a Sixth Man of the Year candidate, very quietly. Everybody wants to hype up the Clippers guys. This guy's giving you 16 and 5. And let me remind you, this guy was a third-team All-NBA performer in the past. Then they have Jay Crowder now back to the bench. It's Jimmy Butler's back after missing one game. Andre Iguodala, who can still play quality defense. He looks a little long in the tooth, but he can still play defense. Tyler Hero's a sharpshooter coming off the bench that shoots about 39% from three-point territory. They're sixth in the league, nearly 42 points a game off the bench. And again, let me remind you, the Celtics get 27 points a game.
I think Duncan Robinson is a better shooter than Tyler Hero, by the way, also. But they're like two of the same type of player.
Well, yeah, he definitely is, but he starts. That's why I point out Tyler Hero coming off the bench. He shoots 39% from three-point territory, but Duncan Robinson's, we saw the other night all the issues that he gave the Celtics just with his movement. There were times where he was moving so much that they would get an open shot. It was the gravity that Klay Thompson has had at times in his NBA career where things just open up because you have to be aware of Duncan Robinson. But the point being, if you look at those teams, the Heat, you look at the Raptors, and if you look at a team like the Milwaukee Bucks, all those teams have guys that they trust coming off the bench. And not just one guy. They all have multiple guys they trust coming off the bench. So I understand that Robert Williams is not in a position where he can earn Brad Stevens' trust after four games, but he brings a different element to the team that nobody else can. What Robert Williams can do is Robert Williams can roll to the basket and dunk the basketball. Alley-oops. I'm sorry, that's not what Daniel Tice does. And I like Daniel Tice. He's a really good player. This isn't about limiting Daniel Tice's minutes. And he's very confident shooting the three, even though the numbers aren't great on the year, 32%. He's looked better as the season goes on shooting the three. Not to mention, he's really good when he sets a screen or when a... I should say this. When you have a Celtic that is driving to the basket, he does this outstanding job of sealing off his own man. So you free up an alleyway. You take away the help defender. Daniel Tice is a good player. But after Daniel Tice, you don't really have somebody consistent off the bench in terms of a big man. Enes Kanter can only work in certain spots. So what Robert Williams can do is he can come off the bench and bring a different dimension. Where if he sets a screen for whether it be Jaylen Brown, whether it be Jason Tatum, he can roll to the basket and get an alley-oop. The big man can't leave him. They got to recover to Robert Williams, or else you can just toss the ball up to him. Think about DeAndre Jordan back in the day when he was actually an effective player and not where he is now, and he's not even in the Orlando bubble because he had COVID-19, he didn't want to go, etc. But think about what he could do. Is I'm not saying he's going to be DeAndre Jordan overnight, but what he could do is he could roll to the basket and dunk. That's an element right now that the Celtics don't have, and I don't understand why you wouldn't, I should say, give Robert Williams an opportunity over the next four games to prove that he can earn a spot in the rotation in the postseason. And if he doesn't, oh well, who cares? Then you don't play him. But let's give him an opportunity to play and see if he can actually contribute at a relatively high level, not even a high level, just a decent level. Because right now, as I mentioned, one guy you can trust coming off your entire bench if you're Brad Stevens. So why not let Robert Williams try to earn the coach's trust over the next couple of games or so? I don't see. Your seed is pretty much locked up. You're not getting the two. Miami lost today. You'd have to just completely come undone not to keep that three seed. Why don't you try out Robert Williams? All right, a lot more to get into. 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett taking you up until midnight. We will get to the Bruins and what a disappointment that's been so far as the round-robin tournament has gotten underway. But I do want to stay with the Celtics. And one other thing that I'm concerned about the Celtics team as we get ready now for the actual postseason. You got four games left. I'm already sick of the regular season. I just want to get into the real thing. The number 617-779-7937. I'll get you a trending in just a second here.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
We're right back to what you want to hear. More of Brian Barrett on EEI.
All right, I'm with you until midnight. How concerned are you about the Celtics as they're now 2-2 in the Orlando bubble? The number is 617-779-7937. And if you want to weigh in on my suggestion that Gordon Hayward should be the point guard of the Celtics, play Kemba off the ball, save some mileage on Kemba's tires, so to speak, feel free to weigh in on that as well. But I want to mention this real quickly. Something that has gone under the radar this season, because he's had a tremendous season, is Jaylen Brown. He's had a great season. We all know this. But one thing that sticks out to me with Jaylen Brown, do you realize that on the season, not just one game or two games, on the season, Jaylen Brown has more turnovers than assists. That's an issue. And one of the things that pops out to you when you see it, you can actually see what's happening with Jaylen Brown, is when he gets past his defender and he gets into the lane and the help defense comes, he sees that pass too late. He doesn't realize right away he's got to get rid of the basketball, find that guy in the corner. That's the next evolution, if you will. That's the next step that Jaylen Brown has to make in his career, because right now it's a problem. And obviously defenses are now seeing it. They're realizing, hey, when Jaylen Brown gets past his defender, make sure you show the help, because he's not capable of making that next pass right now. He's got to know where his guys are going to be. So ordinarily, with the spacing of the floor, when you beat your guy into the lane, you're going to have a shooter open in the corner. If the spacing is properly executed, you should have a guy open in the corner. And Jaylen Brown's just going to be more aware and be able to make that pass. Because one thing I give Jaylen Brown a ton of credit for in terms of this Celtics team, and I get that Marcus Smart, everybody likes to call him the heartbeat of the team, Jaylen Brown, in my mind, is the one that brings the energy every night. Especially at the beginning of the game when Marcus Smart's coming off the bench, it's Jaylen Brown that brings the energy. Jaylen Brown is the guy that's always going balls to the wall. Sometimes Jason Tatum can float a little bit, and you don't really know what you're going to get with Kemba right now. He looks better coming off the knee. But Jaylen Brown's the guy that right off the start of the game, he's coming at you, whether it's defensively, whether it's in transition. He's always going 100%. I'm not accusing the guys of not going 100%. But the point being, Jaylen Brown is the one that elevates the energy on this team. So I give him a lot of credit for that. But one thing that he has got to get better at, he has got to get better at not turning the ball over. And especially it's coming on situations where he's actually creating an opportunity for the team and he's just not able to execute it. So that's the big thing with Jaylen Brown, is he's got to be better reading defenses after he beats his man off the dribble. It's not really after he beats his man off the dribble either. It's because his first step is so damn explosive. It's not like he's giving somebody a crossover and getting past him or something along those lines. It's just his athleticism is so great that he gets by guys. But the problem is he almost has to slow down his thinking in his head after he passes the defender and realize where these guys are. Now, that's something that's going to come. I'm not concerned about this long term with Jaylen Brown. But right now, it's an issue. He turns the basketball over way too much when he beats his guy off the bounce, so to speak. And that's a time where you think, all right, well, he's creating an opportunity for the rest of the team, yet he's blowing the opportunity. That's the thing that's just baffling to me. All right, but a couple of other things to be concerned about this Celtics team, and that's why I believe, I know that the national media has been very high on the Celtics. Locally, people have been very high on the Celtics as they've now returned to the Orlando bubble. But one thing that I would say about this team, in my mind, it's much more likely that they lose in the second round to the Toronto Raptors than they actually come out of the Eastern Conference. The Raptors are a really good basketball team, and you're going to have to beat three exceptional teams to get to the NBA Finals. And I just don't believe this Celtics team right now is ready for it based on the way they're currently constructed. So when I look at all this stuff, I mentioned the fact Hayward at some point is going to miss conservatively, I'd say two games, because you're basically playing every other night once you get into the postseason. There's no extra day for travel, so you're basically, based on the NBA schedule, going to be playing every other night. And when Hayward gets back after the birth of his child, he's going to have to quarantine. So that's something that you're going to have to account for. And in my mind, I've told you multiple times, I believe he's the best playmaker on the team. And here's what's going to happen for the Celtics based on the way that Gordon Hayward's tenure has gone here with the Celtics, is Hayward will be playing some of his best basketball. He'll be averaging in the postseason like 18-5-5, shooting like 50% from the field and 40% from three, and he'll be playing outstanding, and he'll have to leave the Orlando bubble. That's like how Gordon Hayward's career has gone here. And I'm not blaming him. I don't want to make this about Gordon Hayward leaving the bubble. I have no issue with it whatsoever. No issue with it whatsoever. But I just point out the fact that he is going to have to leave and miss two games. So that's something that works against you, especially if you're playing a team like Toronto in the second round that's exceptional defensively. Another concern you have to bring up, I don't know how you don't put this one into the conversation with this Celtics team, out of all the things working against them, Kemba's knee. And I know that the minutes are going to be up tomorrow night against the Raptors. We'll see how he handles it. But this is the fourth time he's come back from a knee issue this season. And each time he's come back, that same knee issue has come back up. That left knee has been an issue for Kemba all season long. I quite frankly don't have faith that that's going to hold up over the playoff crucible. How can I? If every time they try to bring him back, he re-aggravates it, and after a four-month layoff almost, he isn't ready to go right now, how can I have any faith that he's actually going to make it to the finish line? So that's another issue to be concerned about. There's no depth. I pointed that out. And here's another thing about the no depth. What happens, like we saw against the Miami Heat the other night, and like if Brooklyn was any good, we would have seen last night as well. What happens when some of these guys get into foul trouble? Marcus Smart, the reason he's still in the game the other night, you know why that was, right? Brad Stevens doesn't trust anybody else off the bench, so he keeps him in the game. He kept Tatum in the game the other night, and he picked up his third foul early. Now, it didn't hurt the Celtics against the Brooklyn Nets because they're garbage. But if that was against a real team like a Toronto, if that happened tomorrow night, you'd be in real trouble if you're the Celtics. So it's not just about the fact that you don't have all these guys you trust off the bench, but if these guys get in foul trouble, you are screwed if you're the Celtics. You think about the team, and I'm not comparing this to the 08 Celtics team, but just to point out how inept this bench is right now, think about the bench the Celtics put together in their championship run. Eddie House that could come off the bench and nail threes. It felt like whenever they needed a big three, Eddie House was there to hit it. You had James Posey, who played absolutely incredible defense. And then you had a guy like P.J. Brown, who could give you quality minutes at the big man position. And remember, Rondo was young then, so anytime Rondo couldn't get things done, you could bring Sam Cassell, a veteran off the bench, who he wasn't going to get you a bunch of points like he did back in his day with Minnesota or back in the day with the Houston Rockets his first 2 years when he won back-to-back championships, but he could run the ball club. He could get the ball to Pierce at the proper spot, get the ball to Ray Allen come off the screen, or get the ball to Kevin Garnett where he needed the ball. So that's the type of bench you had where you had four or five guys that you trusted if you were Doc Rivers. With this Celtics team, Brad Stevens only trusts one. And when Gordon Hayward exits the Orlando bubble for an extended period of time, at least a couple of days because he has to come back in quarantine, you don't have anybody you trust off your bench right now based on the way that Brad Stevens has used this team all season long or the way he's orchestrated his rotation, so to speak. And another thing I would point out is this is Tatum's first go-around as the go-to guy on the team. Teams are going to blitz him. He's going to see coverages that he's never seen before. I believe that's going to be awfully tough for him to adjust to. And we've seen it since really the Celtics have come back to this bubble situation. Teams are targeting him, and rightfully so. He's the best player on the team. Last night, quite frankly, his game against the Nets, that was just a strong shooting display where, what, he hit six threes or five threes? You're not going to get that every night from Tatum. He was hitting some ridiculous step backs. I know he's capable of hitting those, but you're not going to be able to get him down like you did the other night. And think about a team like Philly. If Philly stays at the sixth seed, and Ben Simmons comes back, he's day-to-day with this knee issue. Apparently he dislocated his kneecap, but MRI came back, no structural damage. But if he comes back, Ben Simmons is one of the better perimeter defenders, wing defenders in the NBA. You put him in on Tatum. And then you have a guy coming off the bench like Tybal that can play well defensively as well. And then you think about the Raptors, they can put OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam on Jason Tatum. So it's going to be awfully difficult for a guy in his first run as being the man on this Celtics team to be able to carry the team based on what he's going to have to go up against defensively. And when you get to that Raptors series, you got to account the coach too. You got to account Nick Nurse being there. And then the other thing I'd point out is the East coaches are now good. Brad Stevens, me and Rob Bradford had this conversation last Saturday. When you look at Brad Stevens, his playoff resume has not been great. I'm going to give you the coaches he's beaten. Freddie Hoiberg. And really, they should have lost that series against the Bulls if Rondo didn't go down with the injury. The Celtics were trailing 2-0 against an 8 seed. And by the way, this is where Fred Hoiberg's at, who Brad Stevens beat in the first round. He's coaching at Nebraska. Big powerhouse in college basketball in Nebraska. It's a football school. Scott Brooks, who sucks. Okay, this guy wouldn't take Kendrick Perkins out of the game in the NBA Finals when he was the coach of Oklahoma City, when basically all the Heat were doing for four games in a row were exploiting Perk in pick and rolls, and Chris Bosh was just hitting jump shots, and it made it incredibly easy for the Heat. He's not a good coach. Joe Prunty, not in the league anymore. He's the guy that was the interim coach after Jason Kidd was fired in Milwaukee. Brett Brown, he should not be the head coach of the Sixers right now. Brett Brown, by the way, he finally switched Ben Simmons' position. We're 3 years into the guy's career. He just switched his position. Nate McMillan, Brad Stevens beat. I give him credit for that. He's good, but the Celtics were significantly more talented than that Indiana team a season ago. You lost to David Blatt if you were Brad Stevens. Mike Budenholzer twice. Oh, yeah, he's still in the East. Ty Lue twice. So he hasn't really, outside of Nate McMillan, beaten a really good coach. And now if you look at the Eastern Conference, here are the coaches of the top six teams in the East. Outside of Brett Brown, who in my mind is an awful basketball coach. He should not be the head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. You have Nick Nurse, who, and I get it, it's a short tenure. He has a 718 winning percentage, 667 winning percentage in the postseason. Just won an NBA championship. He, in my mind, is what everybody thought Brad Stevens was going to be. He's the genius right now in basketball. He's the one that's coming up with all these innovative defenses. He's the one that his team is second in the East. And guess who they lost? They lost Kawhi Leonard. So I don't want to hear this crap about the Celtics being the three seed because they had injuries this season. The Toronto Raptors lost their best player, the MVP of the finals. Oh, not to mention, Pascal Siakam was out for an extended period of time. Marc Gasol missed north of 20 games. You had Serge Ibaka out for an extended time. And Kyle Lowry missed about 15 games. So they had more injuries to more important people than the Celtics did. And that team, the Toronto Raptors, is going to be the number two seed and get a cakewalk in the first round of the playoffs against the Magic and the Nets. Okay, so he's really good. Eric Spoelstra won two championships, 593 winning percentage, which is better than Brad Stevens at 563, 602 postseason winning percentage. Then you have Mike Budenholzer, who Brad Stevens has lost to twice in the postseason, and Nate McMillan, who's a pretty good coach as well. So Brad Stevens is going to have to beat multiple good coaches if he makes a run this year in the postseason. For a while, the Eastern Conference coaches were horrific. They were bad. There weren't many good coaches in the East. That's why they always turn over. Now you have a good group of coaches in the Eastern Conference. Brad Stevens is just one of them. And in this group, Nurse, Spoelstra, Budenholzer, Stevens, McMillan, I'd put Stevens fourth in that list until he proves otherwise. He has the opportunity this year in the postseason, but he's got to prove it. All right, 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight. A lot more to get into, including this. The Bruins went from the best team in hockey to a team that I don't recognize right now. And I'm very concerned about it. I'll tell you why next right here on WEI.
We're right back to it. This is Brian Barrett on EEI.
You know, I think if you want to make a run in the playoffs, you got to beat every team anyways. So, you know, the situation is what it is. And I think the worst thing that's going to happen is we're going to lose the locker room and our practice rank. So that's about it. I really don't care where we finish. I think we just have to focus on our game and try to improve that coming Sunday and then going to next week. But, you know, yeah, you got to beat anybody.
All right, that's your goaltender, Tuukka Rask. Oh, man, did I hate that. What do you make of Tuukka Rask essentially saying, no big deal that we're not going to be the one seed? 617-779-7937. Well, it's funny because the coach thinks it's a big deal. So what Bruce Cassidy said. Well, that part sucks. I'm not going to lie to you. But that's the situation this year with the stoppage of play. We knew the rules going into it, that we would lose a little bit of the advantage we had gained. But we are where we are now. Unfortunately, the Bruins got screwed based on the format because if basically you took the regular season point totals and you carried that over into the round robin tournament, the Bruins would have been the number one seed, even if they lose all three of these games. But they didn't. They decided to do a different format. And unfortunately for the Bruins, it did not work out in their favor. And now they're going to not be the number one seed. Their best opportunity is to be the number three seed because Washington lost to Philly today. So if you beat the Capitals, you can be the number three seed. But the fact that the goaltender after the game last night is making it out to be like, oh, no big deal that we're not the one seed, that pisses me off. No urgency whatsoever with Tuukka after the game. It seems like he's just saying, no big deal. Well, the Flyers look really good. We know what Washington is, and we know the trouble that the Bruins have had with the Capitals this year. The Lightning look great. The Lightning look exceptional right now. So having the one seed just makes your life so much easier because you avoid teams or two of these really good teams, right? So if you end up with the number one seed, you get the easier road than you do. It's very simple, Tuukka. So I don't understand why this isn't important to you whatsoever. If anything, the Bruins, of all teams, right, the Bruins should realize, out of all teams in the NHL, how advantageous the easier road can be. Think about what happened last year for the Bruins. They didn't have to play the Lightning, and they didn't have to play the Capitals. And so they get Columbus, and they get Carolina. Now, I know they beat Toronto in the first round. That was not an easy series. But Columbus and Carolina, not very difficult series for the Bruins. So they benefit more so than anybody else last year from getting an easier road. Why wouldn't you want your road to be as easy as it possibly can be entering the postseason? And getting the number one seed does that for you. It's not so much about the home ice. This isn't the NBA where home court is everything. But it's just making the road easier for you. And another thing I'd say about Tuukka, he was not great yesterday. I thought the Braden Point goal was incredibly soft. He didn't know where the puck was. And then the game winner, incredibly juicy rebound to Tyler Johnson. He couldn't control the rebound. Tyler Johnson puts it in. It's a 3-2 game, and the Lightning go on to win that one. So to hear him after the game basically say, no big deal, the one seed, not a big deal whatsoever. Well, here's the bigger deal. The Bruins look like crap, and the goalie didn't look good either. Tuukka Rask didn't look good either, so that's a big deal. How do you feel about your team right now? Because they don't look very good. And clearly we went to the hiatus, and the Bruins were the best team in the entire NHL. Where's that team right now? They have not shown up to the bubble. This team had incredible momentum. They looked like they were headed to a Stanley Cup final, and they were looking like they wanted to avenge their loss to the St. Louis Blues a season ago. Where's that team? Because I don't recognize this Bruins team that's playing right now. I recognize the Lightning from last year when they were one of the best teams in NHL history in the regular season. It looks like that team's arrived in the Orlando bubble, or the Orlando bubble, the Toronto bubble in this case. The Flyers, they had this exceptional run before the break. It looks like they picked up right where they left off. I don't know where the Bruins are at right now. So if you looked at it against the Lightning, if you looked good in three periods, I'd be like, all right, fine. They lost in tough fashion, but they didn't. They were horrible in the first period. They were good for a period and a half. The second period, they showed some fight after the Krug fight. And then the first half of the third period, they were pretty good. And after that, they didn't look good whatsoever. And the thing that stuck out to me yesterday, and the difference in the game to me, the difference between these two teams right now, man, the depth of the Lightning is just frightening. When you look at that second line with Johnson and Cirelli and Killorn on that second line, those guys are deep. They're loaded. And if you were going to play a seven-game series against the Lightning right now, would you feel like the Bruins could beat them? Because they don't even look like they belong on the same ice yesterday. Really, they really don't. And another thing I'd point out is Chara looks slower than usual. And I get it that he's older, etc., but my God, does he look slow. And he's not handling the puck well. So he's not handling the puck well, and he looks slow. That's an issue for the Bruins going forward. And another thing I notice is just Marchand hasn't shown up, and Krejci's been atrocious. I don't know what's going on with Krejci, and maybe you can blame it with some of the guys around him, because it seems like that's been an issue for this team for a number of years, trying to put the proper guys around Krejci. But it's not like he's having an impact on the game whatsoever, and it's just the guys around him are letting him down. He's not playing well. Marchand hasn't shown up whatsoever. And the break, in my mind, it didn't help these older players. So we were wondering, heading into the break, okay, could it actually benefit the Bruins? Because they're an older team, they can get some rest, and they'll come out flying. Chara gets some rest, Bergeron gets some rest, Krejci gets some rest, etc. And then they can come out of the break, and they'll actually be better for it. Now, the reality of the situation was they were much better just playing where they were, because the Bruins felt like, okay, they're about to peak for the postseason, and now these older players, they get a dial up to get to that level, and the older veterans on the Bruins, they're not there yet. But I would question this. How come all these other teams, or I should say at least Philadelphia and the Lightning in particular, the two teams that the Bruins have played, how come it seems like they're incredibly ready to play right now? They're ready when they get to the Toronto bubble, and the Bruins aren't. That's something that I point out, is how come those teams are ready and the Bruins aren't? What the hell was going on with the Bruins this whole time? And I know they had the situation with the COVID-19, and Pasta wasn't practicing, but Pasta looks fine. The younger guys look fine. McAvoy looks fine. It's the older veterans on this team that don't look ready to play right now, and these other teams that have some older players, they look fine right now. But another thing I would point out with the Bruins is they realize this could be it, right, with this Bruins team. Now, quite frankly, they shocked me, because I thought last season that's it for the Bruins. You go seven games against the Blues, a team that you should have beat. You couldn't get it done then. I felt like, all right, the window's probably shut on this core of Bruins, right? I know you have some nice young players, the McAvoys, the Carlos, and obviously Pasternak, those guys. I understand that, but the Bergerons, the Krejcis, the Chars, those guys are getting up there. They're getting a little bit long in the tooth, although Bergeron's still an exceptional player. But just coming off that loss last year, and based on the fact we knew Tampa was going to be good, we knew Washington was going to be good, you felt like, okay, maybe that was the end for the Bruins. So I give them a ton of credit for the way they responded this year. And obviously, this hiatus, if you will, it screwed the Bruins over more so than any other team in the NHL. And in terms of an advantage they built up, they got none of that when you get to this round-robin situation. But this is their last opportunity, their last best opportunity, if you will, to get it done and actually win a Stanley Cup. And here's the thing about the Bruins. If they don't get another one, in my mind, it'll feel like you left a lot of meat on the bone as a group, right? Because think about this. The Bees have played in three Stanley Cups since 2011, and they've only won one. 13, Chicago, and I get that was a better Blackhawks team than the Bruins, but we all know Game 6 was right there for you, and then Tuca happened. But last year, you were the better team than the Blues. Remember, the Blues, like, barely, they were the worst team in the NHL for an extended stretch until after the new year. They started to become a much better team, but you were better than the Blues from a talent perspective, and they just beat you up. You lost on your home ice in Game 7. But think about this. If this group doesn't get another one, wouldn't you have to acknowledge that this team is underachieved in terms of the core group of guys? Since 2010, the Blackhawks have won 3 Stanley Cups. The Penguins have won 2, and the Kings have won 2. The freaking Kings have won 2 Stanley Cups. And if you go back to 9-09, if you will, the Pens have won 3 in the decade. So the Bruins are like, in my mind, the Broncos of the NFL over the last decade. Yeah, they were really good, and they won 1 Super Bowl, but they should have gotten more. I mean, Peyton Manning threw 55 touchdowns in a season, and the Broncos only got 1 Super Bowl out of that Peyton Manning era in Denver. The Bees team, to me, same thing. They were really good, but as of right now, they've only got 1 cup. And I understand that if you look at it, this team has had a lot of really good players. Chara, and I get it, not anymore. He's long in the tooth. But for an extended period of time, he was one of the best defensemen in the NHL. You think about Bergeron. He's up for the Selkie every year. You've had quality goalie play for a number of years. Say what you want about Tuca, and maybe you don't trust him. But you went from Tim Thomas to Tuca. You've had really good goalie play for an extended period of time. Marchand has developed into an absolute stud. Pasternak's one of the best goal scorers, if not the best scorer right now in the NHL. I'd still go with Ovechkin because he's done it for a number of years, but Pasternak's right up there. Krejci's been, outside of the past 2 games, really good for an extended period of time. You have young guys like the McAvoys, the Carlos, the Krugs of the world, and this group would only get 1. You'd be behind the Kings, behind the Penguins, behind the Blackhawks. This would be a team that would not be memorable in the NHL for its time together as a core, and in my mind, that would just be such a tough pill to swallow as a Bruins fan, that this team, this group, this core in the Toronto bubble, how do you have any faith whatsoever that this team's going to make a run? I feel horrible about the Bruins right now. How could anybody be confident in this team right now? They have shown us nothing. They have shown us nothing since they returned. So I heard after the exhibition game, well, no big deal. It's an exhibition. All right, I gave them the benefit of the doubt. And then they go up against the Flyers, and I hear, oh, well, Tuca didn't play. Okay, fine. Now, what's the excuse against the Lightning? You played well for a period and a half. Last time I checked, there's 3 periods. You were horrible for most of the game, especially the first period. So when are we actually going to see the team that played before the hiatus? When is that team going to show up to the Toronto bubble? Because quite frankly, they're running out of time. They have to figure this out. Unless they show us something on Sunday against the Capitals, and if they lose in a tough battle, so to speak, and it's 3-2 and the Bruins look really good and they look like the Bruins team we saw a couple of months ago, okay, then you'll feel better. But they have to show up for 3 periods. You have to see something out of Krejci. You have to see something out of Marchand. You have to see Tuca play better. You have to see Chara look like he can actually skate, because right now he doesn't look like he can skate and he doesn't look like he can handle the puck. You need to see this team show up on Sunday. And right now, how can you have faith that they're gonna? We've seen an exhibition game and 2 games. They don't look like themselves. All these other teams in the bubble look like they know how to play. They look like they're ready to go. And really, I'm alluding to the Lightning and I'm alluding to the Flyers. The 2 teams you've played, both those teams came into the bubble. They were ready to go. How come the Bruins, who are the best team in the NHL before this hiatus, how come they haven't shown up? Somebody's got to answer that question. All right, 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight. All right, I want to get into this. And if you want to weigh in the Bruins, you can. Or the Celtics, certainly on the table all night. A former teammate of Cam Newton says Cam will not work with Bill's coaching. I'm concerned. I'll tell you why next right here on WEI.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.